Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. God never changes. His love never changes. His opinion of our sin never changes either. Today, more on the lie that God is more tolerant than he used to be, a lie we must all renounce. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. We're in a series on 10 lies about God and why you might already be deceived. Erwin Lutzer is speaking about lie number 2, that God is more tolerant than he used to be, with lessons from an old country church.
Around that church, there was a cemetery. Now, we don't do that today, but that was a powerful theological lesson. It was talking about the church militant, the church alive, and the church triumphant. And you walked right past the cemetery because God was saying, I want you to walk past the alumni association before you get to the undergraduates. And he says, we come now to the church of the firstborn, to God, the judge of all. If you were with us last time, you know that we spoke about approaching God and how to do it. And now we can come into the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, the very place from which they were forbidden, that very citadel where the awesome holiness of God resides. We come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, possibly the Old Testament saints, and then to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, whose blood is so much better than that of Abel. Abel's sacrifice was provisionally accepted, but he died, you remember, at the hands of Cain, his brother. But Abel's blood was of no value to atone for Abel's sins, much less could it atone for the sins of anyone else. But we come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that has a much better message connected with it than the blood of Abel or the blood of any human being could have. You see the contrast? Sinai. Stay away. God's presence is not mediated. Therefore, you cannot endure it. Zion, Jesus has come. Come, come to the city of the living God. Come into the very holy place. Jesus is here. That's the first contrast. You say, well, is God more tolerant? You're asking the question too soon. You have to stay with me. Secondly, there's another way to describe this contrast, and that is between the Old Covenant and the New Covenant. The Old Covenant and the New Covenant. It says there in verse 24 that Jesus is the mediator of a new covenant. Now, in the Old Covenant, you have to understand, God made a covenant with a whole nation. In fact, even there at Sinai, they all said, whatever the Lord has said, we will do. Mind you, they went back on their word within a matter of days, but they meant well at the moment. Now, God says, I'm going to make a covenant with a whole nation, and the whole nation has to obey me. And the Lord says, there's not going to be any freedom of religion. I want you all to worship the same God, and if you follow false gods, you should be stoned, and I'm going to rule through the prophets and through the kings directly, and I'm going to look at Israel as a nation, and if you sin, you are going to receive some very severe, immediate penalties. The New Covenant is entirely different. In the New Covenant, we discover that God is no longer going to deal with a nation. He's going to deal with individuals, and he's going to pluck them up from the different countries of the world and save them and form what we call the church today with both Jew and Gentile. God is going to bring them together to form this new spiritual nation. And furthermore, they are now going to be, the church is going to be, an island of righteousness in a sea of paganism. And therefore, we're to obey those who have the rule over us, even if they are pagan, even if they don't accept our viewpoint. Unless it conflicts with a matter of conscience, we are to be good and obedient citizens. Now, look at this. This is an amazing passage in 1 Corinthians. Either you need to turn to it or listen carefully. Paul is talking about our relationship with the world in this new era. And this is what he says. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 9. I have written to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people. And then he clarifies. He said, not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral or greedy or swindlers or idolaters. In that case, you'd have to leave this world. What if you worked in the loop and said that I'm not going to eat with anyone who's sexually impure, anyone who's greedy, anyone who's a swindler, anyone who is immoral, anyone who's these things? You'd probably be eating your lunch alone. So Paul says, that's not what I mean. Of course you have to eat with these people. But he says, I am writing to you that you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a brother and he's sexually immoral or greedy or an idolater or a slanderer or drunkard. With such men, don't even eat with him. Because, see, he claims to be a believer. He claims to be a member of the church. And so you don't associate with somebody who's living like that. What business of mine, verse 12, is it to judge those who are outside the church? Are you not to judge those inside? God will judge those outside. God's going to take care of those people. What he's saying is, expel this wicked man from your midst. They had somebody in their congregation who was having an immoral relationship with his mother-in-law, or his his father's wife, at least, it says. That's the way to say it in chapter 5, verse 1. So what Paul is saying is, you know, our first responsibility isn't to clean up the world morally, because that's impossible. I mean, we have many campaigns here in America that try to do that, and they're moderately successful. But that's not our primary responsibility. It is to have a pure church, not a pure world. That's impossible. But as we purify the church begins to share the good news of the gospel and has power in the world. Notice what Paul is saying. He's saying what you ought to do is to discipline the people within the church who don't live like Christians. You say, well, what about all those dozen things in the Old Testament that you told us about for which people should be stoned? Those are the very things for which churches should discipline their people. We don't have the power to put people to death because we do not have that Old Testament theocracy, but we do have power to do, relegate people to spiritual death by cutting them off from the congregation and recognizing that God has not changed his mind about any of these things and therefore condemning all of the things that are mentioned in the Old Testament that are worthy of death. They are still things that God hates, and we have to recognize that. So Paul is saying that what you need is a pure church in the midst of a pagan world. One day a woman came to her pastor and said, you know, I am living in sin, but I'm a Christian, so it's different. He said, yeah, it sure is. It's far worse. It's far worse. You claim to be a believer. Your name is enrolled in heaven. You're associated with a holy Jesus. You have become one with him, and you're living like the people of the world. It is very serious. As a matter of fact, if the church does not discipline you, most assuredly God will, because the book of Hebrews says that he scourges every son whom he receives. And if you are not disciplined for your disobedience, it is proof that you are not a child of God, no matter what aisle you walked or what card you signed. This is serious stuff. It's the contrast between the old covenant and the new covenant. But there's a third way to describe the contrast, and now finally we're going to find an answer to the question with which I began the message. Is God more tolerant? Is it safer to sin today than it was back then when people were so harshly treated? Well, let's look at the text, and what a passage this is. We're back in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 25. See to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from him who warns us from heaven? At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, once more I will shake not only the earth but also the heavens. And the words once more indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Wow, what's the third contrast? It's the contrast between immediate physical judgment and future eternal judgment. In the Old Testament, when you disobeyed, the great emphasis was on losing your life. You were put to death. You were stoned. It's true that there was an eternal aspect to the punishment as well, but that was not the emphasis. If you didn't obey God, the earth opened, and in the case at least of some, they fell into it as a judgment of God. New Testament, entirely different. God allows sins to accumulate. It says in the book of Romans that there are people who store up wrath for the day of wrath. Furthermore, it talks about the fact that that judgment shall be much greater. Much greater. Now, let me give you three very important principles, and I shall mention them briefly. And these are the ones now that will tie it together in our minds and hearts. Listen very carefully. Number one, the greater the grace, the greater the judgment for those who refuse it. The greater the grace, the greater the judgment for those who refuse it. If they did not escape because of Sinai, what do you think is going to happen to the world because of Calvary? Wow. If they did not escape, how much less will we when he's speaking now from heaven through his Son? The greater the grace, the greater revelation of God, the greater the judgment that is still future. In fact, then he shook the earth. He came and Mount Sinai trembled and it shook and the people were scared. But the day is coming when he's going to shake just not the earth, but the whole heavens. As a matter of fact, he's going to shake the universe. God is going to come. The God of Sinai is going to come in judgment, and you can imagine what that judgment will be like. Now, I want you to know that I think in the Old Testament that those penalties that were so harsh to us, that those penalties were actually very gracious. Because people saw the immediate effects of their sin. They knew that if they disobeyed, instantly, they'd be punished. Today, people say to themselves, it's not that bad. God's not doing anything. And therefore, they think to themselves that he's more tolerant and understanding because Jesus has come and, you know, nothing's happening. This leads to the second important conclusion. The greater the grace, the greater the judgment. Secondly, and now this is from my heart to yours. Everything I've said is from my heart to yours, but this especially. Never interpret the silence of God as the indifference of God. Don't you ever think that because God is silent, he's indifferent to what's happening. In fact, it says in the book of Ecclesiastes, when the sentence for a crime is not quickly carried out, the hearts of the people are filled with schemes to do wrong. I like the translation that says that when God does not execute his judgments quickly, people think it is safe to do wrong.
Erwin Lutzer with God is More Tolerant Than He Used to Be. The second of 10 Lies About God and Why You Might Already Be Deceived. Next time, why a believer's sin is so serious. 10 Lies About God can be yours as a CD series sent as our way of saying thanks for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.